it's been really great this morning, but it's also been bad because we've had all our congressional people all in one spot this morning, so it's been hard to catch everybody. But I have persevered, and I now have Congressman Mark Sanford, former governor for South Carolina. How you doing today, Mark?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day. I'm looking at Lake Erie, and the sky is blue, the grass is green. It's a good day.
It is a good day. And, you know, as you've been up there in Washington, D.C., I know I read your letters and your weekly updates that you put out. The biggest single problem that we have is the budget, and I know you believe that it's the budget, but I haven't seen much progress in tamping it down.
You're dead right. The unfortunate reality of Washington, D.C. right now, and even in the presidential race, is it's the three monkeys. I hear no evil. I speak no evil. See no evil. Yeah, I was trying to look at that third monkey. I couldn't see him. And the least discussed issue is debt deficit government spending, whether in Congress or even in the presidential race. It has been bizarre. And yet, Admiral Mike Mullen, who was the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, when asked what's the biggest threat to American security, answered not the Taliban, not ISIS, not the Chinese, but the American debt. And I believe he's right.
So I know that you work hard to fight against it, but what can be done? I mean, that's why a lot of people are saying we got to throw everybody out and start over. You know, what is it from your side of it, Mark?
Well, it's resolve, one. You cannot do the typical political thing, which is slap somebody on the back, I'm with you, whatever I'm with you means, and everybody gets to fill in the blank based on what's of interest to them. It's got to be, I'm with you, but we got to make an adjustment here, and help me, let's sit at the table, as any family would or any business would, in making the numbers work. Our what's called fiscal gap, the gap between what's been promised and what we can deliver on is huge. It amounts to about 119.
Sounds like Donald Trump to Donald Trump. Huge.
Probably not the right word. I'm picking up a Trumpism there. Although he said he won't touch entitlements, which is a whole different conversation. But it's a frightening number. And you know, in about 10 years' time. So this is not our kids' time or our grandkids' time, but in just 10 years. There'll only be enough money at the federal level to pay for interest and entitlements and nothing else. So you can have a Department of Defense, you can have transportation funds, you can have health care funds. All those go by the wayside without either substantially borrowing more or raising taxes or somehow miraculously cutting other areas of spending. And that's why, you know, I introduced with Senator Enzi just, I guess, 2 weeks ago, a bill called the Penny Plan. Einstein was once asked, so what's the most powerful force in the universe? And his reply was, compound interest. You know, think about it. Compound interest, it works while you're sleeping, and over time it really begins to compound. So these folks, I remember reading a story about a simple seamstress from somewhere in Mississippi, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and she had, you know, not made much over the course of her life, but she invested constantly, saved, invested. Anyway, when she died, she gave this, like, rather large, like, in excess of $1 million gift to the university down in Mississippi. And people were like, how in the world did she do this based on her rather simple earnings? And the answer was, again, compound interest. It can work for you. It can work against you. If we leave the debt in place, it's going to work against us. So what the Penny Plan does is says, let's put the power of compounding to work for us in the opposite direction, in helping to solve this problem for us. So if you cut one penny out of every dollar this year, and you do it again next year, you do it again the following year, and then two more years after that, 5 years in a row, we end up back with a balanced budget. That's a miraculous thought. And we take some of the politics out, because otherwise it's my group against your group against their group. Don't tax me, tax you. You know, it's a continual game of trying to blame the other person or trying to get them stuck with the tax load or the spending load. And so I think that's one of the things we can do. There are a whole number of other things as well. But it comes down to we do need a break from conventional politics where people will give you lip service and that's all. And two, we need a plan. I think the Penny Plan is also helpful on that front.
So how do you feel that is Donald Trump the person that can undertake this and at least shake things up and make it happen should he become the president?
That's the $94 question. I don't know. That is certainly the hope that goes with his candidacy, that he's unconventional, he's outside the political fold. But you don't know until somebody's in office. What is their actual voting record? We don't have a voting record. So we will see. It's certainly my hope, and it's certainly the hope of literally thousands of folks that I saw in the convention hall last night.
What would be the future if we ended up with Hillary Clinton as president?
Yeah, in other words, I guess with Trump is we don't really know. But with Hillary's, we really know, and it's not good. and so, what I know is the Supreme Court complexion would change, and with it, the balance of power between conservative philosophy and liberal philosophy would change with real ramification to probably, sort of an aggregate of maybe 75 years worth of judicial decisions. If you presume that the next president will replace probably three Supreme Court justices at about 20, 25 years a pop, that's 75 years worth of decision-making. That's a big, big deal that goes well beyond 4 or 8 years of a presidency.
Well, I think not only that, I mean, we are looking at a Supreme Court that is definitely changing how they're going about things and ruling on things that you wouldn't think that they would have put their opinions in on.
Yeah. You can get real scary real fast.
It has gotten real scary.
when you begin to, in essence, have either the executive branch in the process of de facto making laws or the judicial branch in the process of de facto making laws, what you have unhinged is the balance of power that the Founding Fathers intended and created. They wanted three balancing acts between an executive that would administer the law, a judicial that would interpret it, and a legislative body that would create it. Those lines are getting really blurry to real negative impact to the taxpayer, to the regulatory load of this country, and to, again, 200 years of tradition.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope that there is a change and that I think if Donald Trump is elected, that the first effect will be maybe a big sigh of relief on business, because hopefully businesses will be unleashed to be able to create the dollars in the economy. And if some of these regulations could be taken off and some of the paperwork, maybe we could actually run our businesses and make some money. I know Sharp Facets, our jewelry store, has been impacted terribly by the economy, the lack of growth, and I think it's the lack of hopefulness that a lot of business people and people are feeling.
Yeah. Gordon Sullivan was once chief of staff of the United States Army, and he wrote a book called Hope Is Not a Method. He was talking about how in which, we get things done. Hope may not be a method, but hope is absolutely vital to the dreams that go with the entrepreneurial effort that has, in essence, been the backbone to job creation in our country. People got to go out and believe. I was talking to one of our boys the other day, and he was talking about trying to get a job with a startup. And he goes, what's interesting to me about all the different folks that I've talked to is every one of them really believes that their startup is the one that's going to work. And I said, it's true and it's vital, because if you don't at least believe that you can make it, you won't. I mean, believing will get you halfway there. You may or may not make it in the world of your little business, but you got to have that hope. And so that's why the political imprint and the political repercussions of what comes out of Washington or state capitals or even county governments is really important to the hope metrics. It's vital to risk-taking in this country, because without risk-taking and entrepreneurial effort, two kids in a basement started up Apple. I mean, you go down the list of different giant companies that all have come as a result of people dreaming, having hope, And a whole lot of elbow grease that's followed those two attributes.
Well, Mark Sanford, what's your hope for the future? What are you looking forward to in the future?
Well, one day, someday, grandkids, but we won't. I don't think you're asking about.
I was asking maybe politically, futuristically.
Yeah. So I think you're asking on a different front. So what I'd say is, I hope for a balanced budget. If we do not turn our country's financial picture around, we're going to suffer wrenching inflation. We're going to suffer a crashing currency. We're going to suffer an incredible cut to American standard of living. And we're ultimately going to suffer a threat to even our form of government. This thing is a tidal wave if we do not address it. And so I've gone to Washington to try and have a effect on that front. And my hope is that I will be able to do just that.
Last question. What do you think about term limits?
I believe in them. You know, it's interesting. I've never run for another office from another office. Our founding fathers were deeply involved in the political body, the political sphere for really the whole of their lives. But it wasn't their career. It wasn't just, you know, they went and sat on one seat for 40 years. They were involved for a number of years, and they went back to the farm. Then they got called up to do something else, and they went back to the farm. And that process of leaving office, which is what term limits are all about, is vital. It's not saying you can't be involved in different ways. It's just saying you can't sit as John Dingell has for 40-something odd years on one congressional seat in Congress without a lot of things calcifying around you to harmful effects of the taxpayer. And so it's something I believed in, I've always lived in, by, and it's something that I think would be vital to changing the political culture in this country.
Thank you very much, Congressman Mark Sanford. I'm going to have you back on the radio with me so we can have some more of these discussions.
Look forward to it. See you.
Right. Thanks so much. All right. Have a good one, Mark. All right. Have a good one, and we will be right here in Cleveland, Ohio, all day long. We'll be back broadcasting again. I want to tell you, I hope you've enjoyed all my interviews here this morning, and we're going to be back out there. We do have a luncheon over there at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's going to be a lot of fun. Then what else do we have this afternoon? Do we have a party we have to go to or something? I mean, darn, it's such heavy job here. But let's see, what else do we have today? Let's see, 10 p.m., convention business, luncheon. Oh, we get a couple hours break. Okay, from 12 to 3, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're going to have lunch over there. It's going to be the Georgia delegation and the Alabama delegation plus South Carolina. Convention business starts at 7 o'clock tonight. That's an easy one for us to get to. And then late tonight, after convention business, a salute to the innovation economy feat. So we'll be checking out that. So I'll talk at you later this afternoon. We'll catch up and maybe play some interviews. And who knows what other trouble we can get into. Trouble, that's my name. Might. Let's see. We might ought to tentatively say this right here, right now. Might be good to broadcast at 3 o'clock because we could still be at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and maybe they'd let us broadcast from there and do a little tour from right there. I know I'm not going to interrupt Rush, but we may break in at the top of the hours just to tell you whether we're going to be able to work that out. But that might be a lot of fun. Emerald, you were with me the other night when we were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We looked around and we said, we got to come back to this place. Quick. What were some of your quick thoughts about what you saw?
That was incredible seeing, like, the outfits and stuff like that, that Jimi Hendrix wore, all the guitars and everything, like Rolling Stones. We just saw a glimpse of what they have in their collection. It's going to be great.
It is. So, and that way maybe we can do some video, we can do some, we'll do lots of pictures, and we'll have a great time. So, that's going to do it for me. You are listening to WCRS right here in Cleveland, Ohio. Going to throw it all the way back to Greenwood, South Carolina. That's going to do it for me. Have a great one, everybody, and keep watching our Facebook and our webpage, Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio. And again, if you're not a Facebooker but you'd like to see it, just go to Facebook.com www.wcrs.amradio. And folks, I'm spending a lot of money up here, and I really could use some more donations. So go buy a First Amendment T-shirt. We sure would appreciate your support. And thank you so much for all of you that have supported us, and we've been getting some calls about advertising. So think about WCRS, because you know what? I keep you in the know, and then you can make the decisions you need to make. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. This is WCRS. Bye-bye, everybody.